you know, these revelations of the elite at a very high level, and we actually know the basic number of them as well, are trafficking, human rape, and human sacrificing of children because they're the closest to God. And when I like read this, I mean, it's unthinkable. Like, you don't want to believe it. And so I mentioned it on Joe Rogan, but I also mentioned that I was starting an AI company. And what shocked me is after the show, more people wanted to talk about the AI thing, and more people were upset about, you know, that I was starting an AI company than they were about, you know, this nightmare of elites eating babies.
It's the first time since 2012. First time since 2012 that there are no British actors nominated for Best Actor or Best Actress. Yeah, British spokesperson said, yeah, well, at least we arrest our pedophiles. So we got that going for
us. And so then I started thinking about why is happening? Like, and I mean, we've seen people who have spoken about it, who have, you know, been who have participated in it and who have left, you know, it's a kind of it's an initiation that you go through to become. It's a confidence initiation that you go through to become part of a team. And that's when I realized that this is not something that's unique to the elites, that human nature involves these kinds of hazing initiations, or else we wouldn't see it happening since childhood.
Andrew Breitbart, I'm quoting you, in a newspaper interview he gave last year discussing the people who run Hollywood, quote,
uh-oh,
yes, quote, I'm telling you, they're uninteresting, they're vicious, they're vitriolic. They're really, really not good people, and I'm willing to say that on the record, close quote. Is there any of that that you regret?
No.
What makes them really, really not good people?
Well, I'm not saying the entirety, but the ones who have controlled Hollywood for the last 40 years, that quote could be attributed to the campus left as well. It could be attributed to people in who are in charge in Venezuela right now. Anywhere where the left gets control, you start to see political correctness run amok. You start seeing dissenting views quashed. They use projection. Right before they do so, they start attacking the people that they're about to go after of being guilty of the very things that they do.
And lesser magic, which the Satanists do, they'll tell you, they show the thing in play before they do. They believe it makes it happen, and it gives it more power once they do it. And then you have the Podesta plan that if Trump won, they would actually do this and have the military turn against Trump, but now they've tried it. It's not an endorsement of Trump. He's doing some things I don't like right now. The point is they are literally pre-programming this and admitting it.
Yeah, and they're willing it into happening, and they're showing everyone an example of what it would be. So that, again, the revelation of the method, you see what's there, and it makes it okay for it to happen. And it's a form of also of predictive programming.
And you started Joe, but then I do it too. He cut you off on another subject. Elaborate, because I've studied the Graham Grimoire's Black Magic, all that stuff to understand these people. They talk about you have to show them, you have to tell them, that's a metaphysical rule. It also gets them ready, and then it makes it even more powerful when you actually do it, and then you realize that they're doing this. Speak to that if you can.
Well, we live in a universe of mind, and the one thing I've started to realize is that these kind of forms of spells, this magic is real. When you believe something enough, you create a reality.
Yeah, we call it a spell. What it is a narrative to control your mind, and we can build incredible things. So it's a program.
It is a program. You select it, you project it, you expect it, and then you collect it. It's the spec method, and it actually works. And so people who are using it for, you know, there's good spells and bad spells, and there's spells that are promoting humanity, and then there's spells that are disintegrating humanity. When people are...
Um what's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly, with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good.
I do feel good. Glad we could bring in the morning with you guys here on the American Journal. Rex, we got some new news coming out, breaking, right?
We have conflicting information. Apparently, it's been confirmed by Axios. That's Mario Newfall reporting. It's been confirmed by Axios that they did indeed shoot down the F-15. Now, we've got a statement from U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, from 17 hours ago, where they say, claim Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard says it downed an enemy fighter jet. It says, fact, all U.S. fighter aircraft are accounted for. What's going on here on Axios then?
It says the IRGC has made some false claim at least half a dozen times. Okay, you know, again, this is like
fog of war.
This is fog of war. This is propaganda going back and forth. And they want to confuse you on both sides so that you can't tell what's the truth. That's why we have independent news. Didn't you have an article or Mario's reporting on something?
Mario's reporting on it. I don't want to get too much into the conflicting information. I just want to let people know right now there's an active dispute between the two countries. America says we haven't lost any planes. Iran says we've lost a plane. Now it's being confirmed by Axios, which really is a U.S. government mouthpiece, that this has happened. I really don't think this story would have come out if there wasn't some substance to it. Just want to let you know you're going to want to tune into Alex Jones Show and The War Room. I'm sure more will come out. But go ahead. Let's get into the deep dive. Let's talk about Ukraine.
Yes. Deep dive. This is my favorite part. This is something that's near and dear to my heart. Again, we do the deep dives to give you guys information, give you guys context beyond the headlines. What we're going to be talking about today is the Ukraine war and the things that are not so mainstream, because there's a lot of confusion on why the United States and Russia and Ukraine have gotten into the situation. And sure, you have to go very far back to understand how we actually got to today.
And just really quick, we're told the Star Wars story of poor, innocent little Ukraine. Russia comes in for absolutely no reason. And you're like, oh, well, NATO expansion, all these reasons. Go ahead and get into
it. Well, let me just preface this before I get started. Okay. I spend a lot of time doing this research. I do it in an impartial way. When I go in and I look at facts, and I don't look at skewing it one way or another or giving you a spin. It is up to you, the viewer, the listener at home, to make your own decision and judgment based off of the information that I'm going to give you. Okay. So let's talk about the Russia-Ukraine war, the war that nobody explained to you. So if you've been following the Russia-Ukraine war, you probably think it started in 2022, but that's not actually the real story. This conflict has gone all the way back into the 1990s, right? And the US, the UK, the NATO have been involved from the very beginning of this process. And so the NATO governments have sent hundreds of billion dollars to Ukraine.
Yes.
And so US officials are actually acknowledging this whole thing about a proxy war. So why does most of the coverage skip the first 30 years? And we're starting to see this pressure build up. And we can pull up this graphic of the Soviet Union, because we need to look at these photos and understand what's happening here. So Soviet Union was something that happened throughout the 80s and ended in the 90s, okay? And you can see all of the countries in that graphic.
It started after the revolution.
Yeah, really. it started after
World War II, we're talking about.
Yes, I meant to say it carried all the way through.
It 1991,
ended.
It dissolved.
It dissolved in 1991, and they had this whole thing, communism, socialism, whatever you want to say. It didn't work out, okay?
Uh-oh.
It didn't work out, and that's part of the reason why you had the whole Cold War. So in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed. Russia went from a superpower, and it broke overnight. So this Boris Yeltsin took over, governed from 1991 to 1999, and then his vision was simple. He wanted to just partner with the West and end the hostility and just join the global economy. But that's not actually what happened. So in 1992, Russia basically adopted this radical economic policy that we came up with known as shock therapy. And the idea from the United States was this.
Immediate capitalism.
Well, it was immediate capitalism and open the markets. They wanted to... The idea was to take the state run and make everything privatized as quickly as possible, similar to how we have here in the government
right.
is only an entity and it doesn't control everything. And so they would open up the markets, they would sell off the government industries, and they would remove price controls all at once. And then if it wasn't for some rogue experiment, and if it was endorsed by the IMF, the U.S. Treasury and Clinton administration, they all supported this.
Sure. And we sent economic hitmen over to their country to divide it up and chop it up and run it. We're like, oh, well, you know, we got – oh, you got the company milk, the country's milk, the USSR milk. It's our milk now. But it became too expensive for those companies to produce those yeah. things. You got mass shortages. Talk about the shock therapy.
So let's watch this video that explains shock therapy. Pay attention here. This video is important to the context of everything. Go ahead and roll the clip.
Publix. Enter Boris Yeltsin, the first president of the Russian Federation. Yeltsin inherited a country in turmoil, shrinking economy, rising nationalism, and widespread uncertainty. To address these challenges, he turned to Western economists and institutions like the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the World Bank, who advocated for shock therapy. Shock therapy was rooted in the belief that transitioning to capitalism should be as rapid and sweeping as possible. The idea was that short-term pain would lead to long-term gain. His architects, like Jeffrey Sachs and Anders Esland, argue that gradual reforms risked a return to socialism. Instead, they pushed for a clean break, dismantling the planned economy in one fell swoop. The first step was lifting price controls, which had kept goods affordable during the Soviet era. Overnight, prices skyrocketed. In January 1992 alone, basic necessities became unaffordable for many. A loaf of bread that once cost a few kopecks suddenly cost several rubles. Hyperinflation reached 1,354% that year, wiping out savings and plunging millions into poverty. For ordinary Russians, this was a nightmare. Imagine an elderly pensioner who had saved her entire life under the Soviet system, only to find that her money was now worthless. People began selling heirlooms, furniture, and even clothes in makeshift street markets just to survive. This period became a symbol of desperation, grandmothers hawking antique samovars and men bartering tools for food. Unemployment, a concept virtually unknown in the USSR, surged as industries shut down or downsized. State-owned factories, once the backbone of Soviet life, could no longer compete in the global market. Entire towns built around a single factory, known as monotowns, were devastated, leaving residents without jobs or prospects. Privatization was another cornerstone of shock therapy. It was here that the seeds of Russia's oligarchy were sown. State assets, from oil fields to aluminum plants, were sold off at bargain prices. Ordinary Russians were given vouchers to buy shares in these enterprises, but most sold them for cash to survive. The beneficiaries, a small group of well-connected insiders who amassed vast fortunes almost overnight. Take the example of Roman Abramovich, who acquired the Sibneft oil company for a fraction of its value, or Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who became one of the richest men in Russia by acquiring Yukosoil. These oligarchs wielded immense power, not just economically, but politically, shaping Russia's future in ways that still resonate today.
Okay, Rex and I lit up at the same time. Rex, you want to talk about that quote that you just wrote down?
Well, where have we heard short-term pain, long-term gain before? We're hearing it right now about this war, about this conflict. You see, propaganda never changes. Just the application of the propaganda
well,
is different.
Well, that is the whole reason why we do these deep dives. Because it uncovers history, and humans have a repeatable pattern in which we've done these things before, we've lived through. So anything you're hearing now where we talk about short-term pain for long-term gain, we've seen it not play out before. So how do we think that it's going to play out positively today?
Right. And I mean, past behavior is the best indicator of present and future behavior. And what do these governments do? Whenever we look at history, they're always just finding ways to screw the people. Look, it's like, oh, we're going to make it equitable. We're going to give everybody shares in these companies that we're going to sell off. But we know everyone's starving. We know everyone needs to sell the shares for bread, for oil, for food. So the oligarchs are going to get it. It's just you understand this when you set the system up. And I think a lot of the time, like with this war, they're like, we didn't know the strait would be closed. What? And they're like, well, we know it's going to be closed. It's our calculation. We got to have regime change. So they just tell us the truth, please.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, let's just look at what happened to Russia's GDP after this. And you're going to be shocked. Russia's GDP fell approximately 50% in less than a decade.
Wow.
50%. Let's go ahead and pull up this graphic so that you can see it. It is insane. When we look at these situations, and you just see Okay, so we'll read this real quick. Russia's GDP fell by 50% between 1992 and 1998, and the industrial production declined by 56% in the same time period.
Well, that's called winning. Like, that's the same winning we're dealing with right now. And that's also probably how it was sold as well.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, well, but wait, there's more. We got to look at what also happened, because now you saw the inflation go up 1,300%. You also see the rate at which men are dying starts to go up in incrementally. And so life expectancy is starting to get crater, and crime starts to surge, and drug abuse starts to explode. Right. And then ordinary Russians are drowning. And this one tiny group at the top, the oligarch, is just sitting there salivating.
It's the new ruling class.
Yes. So can we pull up that life expectancy chart? And you're just going to see how much the life expectancy.
Ooh.
So you can see in 1985, they were doing okay. And then the U.S. just comes in 1990, and they're like, all right.
Dude, they had a life expectancy of 57 yeah. years at one point. You look at France, you look at the West there, and you look at that kind of gradual uptick as healthcare gets better, as technology gets better, as lives improve and as things get easier. And you look at them, they're in the hurt locker.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And look at France. France is chilling. France is like, hey, we don't really care. And they're also involved in these decisions, right? So I want to pull up that quote also of Boris quote.
Borchowski.
Yeah. So he's just talking about, he's basically bragging here that a handful of bankers controlled about half of Russia's economy and most of its media. You can go ahead and read this.
Sure. Borchowski said the exclusive club of tycoons included Smolensky and Potanin. I don't know how you say it.
You
last
can
one.
Skip their names.
Along with banker, I'm going to try to do it, and media mogul Vladimir A. Guchinsky, now 46, oil magnate and banker Mikhail B. Kordachovsky, 35, and bankers Mikhail M. Fredman, 34, and Pietro Oavin, 43, who together head the Alpha Group of financial firms. Among them, Borchowski claimed, they controlled half of Russia's economy.
It's insane. 50%.
Making all of this.
Seven people controlling 50%. What do you think that does? Do you think that they have the right morals to do the right thing by the Russian people?
No, they just want things to be good for them. They're going to destroy the country.
Right. So then there's also, we got to look at this William Burns cable, because the U.S. ambassador warned Washington that if Russians felt humiliating and that they believed that the West was exploiting their weakness after the Soviet Union departed, right? So this shock therapy didn't just collapse the economy, it poisoned the entire relationship, Rex.
Right.
And so the Russians came out of the 1990s believing that the West was going to do something to help them, but they ended up almost destroying them almost by on purpose. Seems like.
Sure. Well, I mean, the goal is like the smash and grab, the destabilization. We see a lot of that here with people getting rich and making all these insider trading, all these deals. What happens? You have a response. And what's that response called? Vladimir Putin. We're going to get into that mm-hmm. a little bit later in the deep dive. But ultimately, what we're seeing here in America is a reflection of the Soviet Union, because bad leadership is going to lead to that strong man.
Yes.
And people are going to want that. That's what Fuentes always talks about, is you have one guy, maybe he doesn't care too much about human rights, but he's going to change things for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts to become a very dangerous calculation
as
time goes on.
Yep. Right? 100%. Now, let's go ahead and pull up number six that talks about William Burns in this cable is saying that the West is taking advantage. So let's go ahead and read this, Rex, if you could read that.
Sure. Winter in Russia is not a time for optimists, and in some respects, the popular mood here mirrors the descending gloom. Born of a mood of national regret over the loss of superpower status and an equally acute sense that the West is taking advantage of Russia's weakness, assertive policies abroad have become one of the few themes that unite Russians. Yeltsin wished to reaffirm Russia's great power status and its interest in neighboring post-Soviet republics.
Yeah, so he is important here. And he's one of these people who's in the government, who's trying to almost whistleblow in some certain capacity, but no one cares.
No one cares.
So, and we're seeing these things play out all over and over again. And then the biggest thing here is NATO. We made some promises during the 90s that we have not kept. So while Russia was falling apart, NATO was expanding east. And for context, NATO's military alliance, it's pretty much if you're in NATO, an attack on you is an attack on everyone
Article
else.
5.
Everyone knows this. So NATO is moving closer to Russia's borders, but it's not just politics. It's a direct military threat. And just remember, We promised Russia when we were taking the Soviet Union apart that we wouldn't move one inch east.
And that's so key. I want to come in here and talk about this.
Go ahead.
Keep this graphic up here on the screen for a second. After 1991, NATO added 12 countries. After 1991, the USSR, now Russia, dissolved the Warsaw Pact, which made all those post-Soviet republics now post-Soviet republics. Russia even tried to join NATO twice.
Yeah.
We didn't want that to happen. Here's a little trivia question for you, Tim. On that map there, which country on that map, it's actually not on that map, which country have they had the second most NATO exercises? 36.
36? Well, what, are you thinking Ukraine?
Ukraine. That's right. So they use Ukraine as this military staging ground. They use this Ukraine situation as something they've given pseudo security guarantees to. And ultimately, they've desperately wanted NATO to or Ukraine to join NATO because that's the completion of the security armada against Russia in their mind.
Yeah.
And they can't let go of that Cold War threat.
Well, yeah. And like I said, the U.S. secretary said this, right?
Sure.
James Baker, he told Gorbachev, who was the one who was making the negotiations, he said we wouldn't move east. And as you've pointed out, we went another country and another country. And then you're starting to see in 1999, we took Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic. And now Russia's just seeing all these things play out. And then we have something that happens in 1999 that also contributes to changing the narrative around NATO's position, because NATO was created as a defensive pact, not an offensive pact.
Not an offensive alliance, a defensive
pact. Okay, so let's go ahead and pull up in play number 8 here that's going to talk about the bombing of Yugoslavia, and it changes the rhetoric and the tone for the rest of the world going forward from this bombing.
Had broken theirs. Russia may have taken the expansion of NATO more lightly if it weren't for another major event in 1999, the NATO bombing of Yugoslavia.
The first bombing of its kind in NATO history. On March 24, 1999, Western nations carried out their threat against Serbia and began the biggest military conflict on Serbian soil since World War II.
This was the first time NATO used military force without the approval of the UN Security Council, and thus international legal approval. This showed that NATO would operate not only as a defensive alliance, but an offensive alliance that had no problem bombing sovereign states it disapproved of. Russia observed all of this and never forgot it. Even the famous Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn decried the action, saying, "NATO has proclaimed to the whole world, might is right. Those who are strong are always right." He added that it was the destruction of a beautiful country in full view of humanity, while civilized governments applaud this. Not only Russia, but many countries across the world opposed these actions by NATO. It was a serious departure from what NATO claimed to stand for, and people would not quickly forget this.
All right, we got to look at timeline here. I'm going to jump in a little bit. What's going on in 1999? Oh, Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal. So Bill Clinton decides to bomb Yugoslavia, to bomb Kosovo, I believe, for 79 days. Mm-hmm. That's an example of now modern foreign policy. That's distracting from the Epstein files.
Distracting 1.0. So it's great analysis there.
Sure.
You kind of create some noise over here. Don't look at what I did over here.
Right.
Create some noise over there. Get everybody to – but again, it's like – people don't look at the long-term chain reaction that happens.
Sure.
Right? And this graphic is showing you, the NATO alliance, it just keeps going up, and you just see country after country after country. This is a great graphic here. And then look at that. So again, do you see where we're moving to? I mean, you just see all the countries ganging up, and then it leaves room for a new president to come in, which we know as Vladimir Putin in 2000, because the Russian population is unhappy. They're done with it. Their entire economy decimated 50% over an 8-year period. And then now you have Vladimir Putin who comes in and he starts cracking down on the oligarchs. Okay. He was part of the KGB, but you can tell, and this isn't like me being like, oh, I love Putin.
I mean, Putin has murdered people, but again, he is coming in here with a reason to save his people, and he cracks down on the oligarchs, he reasserted state control, and he basically stabilized the economy. And so then you start seeing after 2000s, the living standards go up, crime starts to drop, and this is why Putin has become popular, or why he even became popular, because he gave Russian stability after the decade of chaos.
Sure, I mean, that's the key thing to always point out, like you're talking about, like, of course, all these people, all these world leaders are killers, but Trump had the key line in that 60 Minutes interview you always call back to, and the guy's talking to him, he goes, you know, Putin's a killer, sir, Putin's a killer, you really want to work with Putin, he's a murderer. And he goes, Trump goes, you think we're so innocent? And that's the nature of global politics.
Excellent point. And here's the thing, even after all of that that happened in the 90s, the relations with the U.S. didn't just improve. And after 9/11, Russia was actually one of the first countries to offer the U.S. support.
Right.
And they wanted to come in and they wanted to share intelligence. They offered cooperation with the Bush administration. And then NATO kept expanding anyways after the point at which these situations happen. Okay?
Sure.
And then it goes right up to Russia's border. And then 2007, Putin's like, I've had enough, man. And so he goes in and he stands in front of the Munich Security Conference and he publicly calls out NATO of its expansion and serious provocation that's happening. And he says, against whom is this expansion intended for? Let's go ahead and roll up clip number 9 here. And it's going to show you Putin and what he says during this conference.
All of this. When 9/11 happened, Russia still declared full support to the U.S. in fighting terrorism. America didn't seem to care about this gesture of goodwill. In 2004, NATO underwent another round of eastward expansion, this time taking in the Baltic states, Romania, and several other Eastern European countries. In 2005, President Putin complained to American diplomats, "You Americans need to listen more. You can't have everything your way anymore. We can have effective relations, but not just on your terms." In February 2007, he delivered a dramatic speech in Munich where he protested the continuous expansion of NATO.
It turns out that NATO has put its frontline forces on our borders, and we continue to strictly fulfill the treaty obligations and do not react to these actions at all. I think it is obvious that NATO expansion does not have any relation with the modernization of the alliance itself or with ensuring security in Europe. On the contrary, it represents a serious provocation that reduces the level of mutual trust, and we have the right to ask, against whom is this expansion intended?
What do you think about that, Rex?
I think it's a fair question. I mean, you say you need this security alliance, this defense, this offensive alliance that's going to bomb these countries. Who are you protecting the people in your alliance against? You're trying to protect them against us. And I mean, he put over the overtures. He tried to join NATO twice.
He did try to join NATO twice.
So we look at it and we're like, well, we want things to get better in the world. We have hope for change. And we see world leaders say, hey, you know what? Maybe we're motivated in our own self-interest. Why are you being aggressive towards us? We're not trying to declare war on you. And then you see these military actions happen decades later. You see the Russian invasion into Ukraine. And then people talk about it like it all happens in a vacuum.
This is why we talk about the history.
Right.
This is why we give you guys context. Because these things are not just readily available that they're just reporting on them on a regular basis. No, it's headline after headline. New bombing happens here. Explosion here. Donetsk is under fire. And it's like, okay, well, can we start asking more macro level questions and understand, okay, why are we in this in the first situation?
Sure.
I mean, the Biden administration, I'm going to cover in the deep dive.
We got a lot more.
What was the whole reason why this also played out? But we're going to be coming up on a break here, but yes. Again, you guys don't want to go anywhere. We are only halfway through the deep dive, and there are a lot more details for you guys to know about. We will be back after the break. This is Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins on the American Journal. See you after the break. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell. And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway. And a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where to put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. But I got blown up in Iraq. I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theallshowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theallshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we haven't had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theallshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Candidate on in the next hour. We're continuing on with the phenomenal Ukraine-Russia deep dive on NATO, about the war, about all the things that have happened to lead up to this point. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you right now, we have a new rolling sale on the alexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. It's a new rolling sale, up to 40% off Ultra DNA Revival. That's like DNA Force 2.0, if you ever took that old product. Shilajit Caps and Gummies, MK Ultra, Atomic Defense, up to 35% off Colostrum and Life Force, and up to 30% off iodine tincture, methylene blue, methylene red, creatine powder, and the entire InfoWars limited edition 1776 collection. You want to get the bag bundle. It's still available. You want to get all these things. Go check out the store, thealexjonesstore.com, the place to be. Thank you very much. Tim, back to the deep dive.
Yeah, so we were talking a lot about this NATO expansion and going through the history. And so, you know, this is the playbook that kept repeating And so throughout the 2000s, you know, something kept happening in the countries right up to Russia's doorstep. And so governments were being overthrown and replaced by pro-Western, pro-NATO leadership. And then you see these so-called color revolutions. I'm sure you've heard of that. And from Moscow's perspective, the U.S. was behind them. Let's pull up number 10, showing these color, the color revolution. Go ahead and read this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll read the highlighted part. And this is talking about Ukraine. But while the gains of the Orange Bedecked Chestnut Revolution are Ukraine's, the campaign is an American creation, a sophisticated and brilliantly conceived exercise in Western branding and mass marketing that, in four countries in 4 years, has been used to try to salvage rigged elections and topple unsavory campaigns. What's that referring to, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, this is we do this all the time. We do these regime changes, right? Because if there's somebody, not cooperating and not playing against our rules, get them out of here.
Seriously.
Take them out back.
And then they'll say, we don't do that as well. Trump came out and said the goal is not regime change. And then you have him on tape like 10 times saying,
well, we're the best at regime change. Didn't you know, Rex?
Nobody does it like us. It's true. That's very true.
So now we go into 2004 and we have this Orange Revolution. Okay. So this is a disputed election between two candidates, Viktor Yushchenko and then Viktor, I'm going to butcher his name, Yukonchevich or whatever. And so protests started to erupt, okay? And the result flipped and a pro leader. So originally this one guy won and then somehow they reversed it and put in a pro-Western candidate to actually win this election. And you can pull up this picture. Yeah, this is Viktor Yushchenko. And he's the new guy, the yes man, the guy who's going to follow NATO, who's going to follow the U.S. into battle. And so they also used the same playbook in Georgia called the Rose Revolution between 2003 and 2008. The United States trained Georgia's army and military. And then in 2008, Georgia attacks the south of Ossetia. And then they do a breakaway region in which it's right on Russia's border. And then Russia has to respond. OK, and then they won that battle in 5 days. And the EU does an investigation after all this happens. And they do determine that Georgia fired first and that the NATO countries and the U.S. were responsible. This is Europe doing their own investigation.
OK.
OK, so now we just see this from Moscow. This pattern is undeniable. Okay, you've got political turnover, you've got Western alignment, you've got military buildup on their borders, and then for every one of those countries is just a warm up. And we know where the real target is,
right?
And it's Ukraine. And this was the one demand in the one area that has been the most sensitive for Russia specifically. Okay, Ukraine was different from all the rest because it mattered to Russia more than any other country on the map. And in 2008, the U.S. ambassador warned that Ukrainian NATO membership was the brightest of all red lines, not just for Putin, but for the entire Russian political class. And American officials knew exactly what they were doing, pushing against this narrative.
All right. I want to talk about the Ukrainian situation a little bit prior to this. You got to keep in mind, Ukraine had, I believe, the second most nuclear weapons in any of the Soviet bloc countries up against Mother Russia, right? And when they became their own country in the post-Soviet era, post-1991, they made a deal. They said, look, we're going to declare ourselves to be totally neutral. In exchange for that, we want security guarantee from both the Russians and the West that you're not going to mess with our state. Well, that's the strongest argument for Ukrainian sovereignty and for this war and for, you know, their side of the story, their campaign. You look at that, though, and you go, well, you agreed to be neutral. Now you're hosting 36 NATO exercises.
Well,
now you're a NATO partner.
Well, just think about it this way. We were about to go to nuclear arms, like to nuclear conflict over Cuba.
Yes.
Okay. How is that any different in a Ukraine situation?
100%. I totally agree. It's just a new Cuban missile crisis. I mean, the Cuban missile crisis, they're saying they're going to put nukes down in Cuba. That's right on our border. We can't allow that. We got to go to World War III. Got to go to nuclear war. It's the same exact calculation for the Russians. And you think about the American hubris of, oh, we're more important. They don't matter. They're not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm. So that's why 2014 is important, because we've heard 2022, and then a lot of people point to 2014 as another major conflict.
Right.
Let's pull up this video of the Ukraine, NATO, and the Maidan coup, because this is very important context.
Right.
Let's go ahead and pull up number 12 here with that video.
In 2008, the U.S. ambassador to Russia, William J. Burns, wrote to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, "Ukrainian entry into NATO is the brightest of all red lines for the Russian elite, not just Putin. In more than 2.5 years of conversations with key Russian players, from knuckle draggers in the dark recesses of the Kremlin to Putin's sharpest liberal critics, I have yet to find anyone who views Ukraine and NATO as anything other than a direct challenge to Russian interests." American officials were fully aware that Ukraine joining NATO was something that no one in the Russian leadership could tolerate, whether they be in Putin's circle or his liberal critics. Nevertheless, in 2014, the U.S. government under Barack Obama backed the infamous Maidan Revolution in Ukraine. This revolution overthrew the Russia-friendly government of Viktor Yanukovych and replaced it with a pro-NATO government. John McCain, Victoria Nuland, and other American government officials were literally...
Cut back to me for a second. This is McCain. And these congressional people, the people who are American, looking at this like it's a Coldplay concert, and they're like, "Ooh, this right. is so cool!"
Right.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing that pisses me off here. Okay, these people have no idea of reaction and consequence.
Yep.
And action leads to something that happens way down the line. Wake up. Wake up. These aren't jokes. You're going to cause conflicts down the line. Right. You're going to lead to hundreds of thousands of people dying. Right. And you're sitting there with your camera like it's a Coldplay concert. And I'm like, these people have no idea.
Dude, they set it up. They literally they run it all. Victoria Nuland, John McCain literally filming the color revolution. It's in black and white. Not even black and white. It's in Technicolor. It's in 4K, as we say today.
It just pisses me off.
Sure. Makes me mad.
They have no idea what they're doing. And we call these people the adults in the room, and they're just meddling in people's elections, and it causes chain reactions. And you just think, like, if something were like that were to happen here, Rex, sure. what would happen? I mean, we already were freaking out when people thought the Russia collusion was real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like to openly have, let's say, like Russian oligarchs sitting there filming, like, you know, let's say like Trump doesn't get in and like they yes. put in another puppet head.
Yes.
People would have a riot.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, 100%.
They would
crash out. They would go crazy in the street. But you see, we're the good guys. We're the world government. So we get to go over there and play world government.
Yes.
That we're the globalists. That's really what it is. America, the Western Empire, whatever you want to call it. That's what globalism is.
And again, there's a domino effect where you have no idea what you're going to cause down the line. And so these actions have been responsible for the decimation of cities.
Right.
Killing of people's families.
Right.
Murder of citizens who had nothing to do with these conflicts. Absolutely. And they had no clue what they were doing. Sure. They just said, "This is a good idea, sir. This is the best thing since sliced bread. We just need to make sure these people follow our command. And we put a guy in there that's going to be good for the American people."
Yep. And here's the thing. You think about this when you're talking about Cuban Missile Crisis and kind of pointing out the example of the hypocrisy there. The illegal war of aggression, the evil Russians rolling in February of 2022. What are we doing in Iran then? If that's an illegal war of aggression, this has far less justification. Just giving that as an anecdote.
No, you're right. No, like let's play out the rest of the video because you're going to see the reaction of what happens. It is massive. The implications are very real. Let's go ahead and roll the rest of that clip, please.
On the ground in Ukraine cheering as it happened. They didn't even bother to hide their involvement. Just a week before the coup occurred, there was a leaked phone call of Victoria Nuland speaking about the Ukrainian opposition as if she controlled it. When asked about how the EU would react to all of this, she replied, "F*** the EU."
"So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the UN help glue it. And, you know, f*** the EU."
"No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make it stick together, because you can be pretty sure that if it does start to gain altitude, the Russians will be working behind the scenes to try to torpedo it."
That's how much she cared about European interests. And people listening to this in the EU area should seriously consider that. In response to this coup, the ethnic Russian regions of Ukraine, such as Donetsk, Luhansk, and Crimea, immediately rose up in rebellion against the new Ukrainian government. Kiev declared them all to be terrorists and launched what it called an anti-terrorist operation to destroy them. Russia, seeing the opportunity, gladly stepped in to back these separatists and annexed Crimea. Crimea had long been disputed between Russia and Ukraine, and this was seen by Moscow as the chance to settle the issue once and for all. A war began between the Russian-backed separatists of eastern Ukraine and the US-UK-backed government in Kiev. The New York Times reported plainly in 2024, the partnership between the CIA and Defense Intelligence of Ukraine began in late February 2014, so immediately upon the Ukrainian government changing. It was recently revealed in declassified documents that the CIA built 12 military bases on the front lines in Donbass.
Unbelievable.
So that's a war. Like, we're fighting a war against them, and then they fight back, or they try to seize territory they think is significant to their conflict, to their war, to their objectives. And we go, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't. You're not allowed to fight against us. We're allowed to build up force against you.
Well, imagine naming your own citizens who probably voted for somebody.
Right.
And then calling them terrorists because they don't agree with you doing a regime change to put somebody who didn't have your best interest in mind.
Sure.
Unbelievable. So when I look at these situations, I'm like, it's very black and white for me. It's like we have a history of meddling our nose in other people's business.
It doesn't belong.
It doesn't belong. And here's the thing, Russia, it's all this Cold War stuff because they think it's the Soviet Union still. No, Russia realized that communism and socialism didn't work. That right. is why it collapsed on its own. With the help of the NATO countries and a lot of other countries pushing that, but they realized our people are struggling. This isn't going to work out, and that's why you had succession after succession and countries getting out.
And we see these economies. Here's the thing: we're all mixed economies. The United States is a mixed economy. Government owns percentages of very large corporations like NVIDIA. Government basically controls a lot of things behind the scenes. The same is true in China, even more so, and in Russia, maybe to a greater or lesser extent. To say that we are the free market liberal warriors who go around the world and liberate these oppressed populations from the evil, tyrannical, fascist, communist dictator, we don't live in 1940 anymore.
Yes. Yes, and let's just look at the funding chart on number 13 and just see how much money we fueled.
That's what it's always about.
It's so much money, man. So much money. Hey, we can't do daycare, remember.
That's right. Daycare is too expensive.
We need moms. Let's go ahead and pull up number 13 here with the funding chart.
Wow.
Just look at how much the U.S. contributed in 2024.
Bilateral aid commitments from the top 20 donor countries and from European Union EU institutions as of December 31st, 2024. You got the United States at over like 130 billion. And then the EU is a little bit close to that, like 110, 125 billion. UK is at like 40 billion. Germany is at close to 30. And then it kind of drops off a cliff from there.
I'm sorry. How are we the biggest number here when we're the furthest away?
That's an excellent point, Tim.
Somebody make sense. Somebody make this make sense.
Well, see, you got.
I mean, Germany's right there. For
Tim, you're not a patriot. You don't think it's great that America controls and manipulates and abuses all these people around the world. Hey, we need to spend the $100 billion so we control another country thousands of miles away from you.
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. We're going to air out what Biden did here. But also Trump was responsible in these circumstances, too. Okay.
Uniparty,
under Trump. The U.S. shipped lethal weapons to Ukraine for the first time. For the first time.
Obama gave you blankets. I gave you javelins.
Yes, that's the, yes. He sent javelin anti-tank missiles, expanded training, and then he did deeper intelligence cooperation. And under his presidency, he did brag exactly what Rex just said. Okay? And then under Biden, it just went to overdrive.
Sure.
I mean, he just said, let's just crank it all the way up. And then Ukraine had been pushing for NATO membership for years. But under Biden, he was like, come on in.
Right.
You can join us over here. Open for business. And so at that point, remember, we said that this earlier, like the U.S. ambassador warned in 2008 that this was the brightest of all red lines for Russia.
Yes.
And Washington knew what this signal meant. Biden's alive during this time period, was sure. he not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's debatable. Go ahead.
I mean, he was under the Obama administration.
He was walking around.
So now you've got all of these situations play out. And as soon as we started this bid to try to get Ukraine, Russia was like, we've had enough. I mean, there's only but so much you can take. And you can sit here and call me, you're a Russian commie,
Putin loving puppet.
And it's like, no, man, I'm just looking at the facts. I'm giving it to you guys at home. As I said, you have the ability to make your own decision with this information. And this is not me being partisan. I've talked about both Trump and I have talked about Biden in the same sentence here, and they have both committed this entire situation to get off the rails, and there's no end in sight.
Yeah, they're both killers at the end of the day. Like, these people are murderers, and they're murderers of people far away and at home. And like, that's what they do, is their position is to generate more money and, as a consequence, more death. That's what the military industrial complex is. That's what it is when Larry Fink of BlackRock goes over to Ukraine with Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff, yep, and meets with Zelensky, and they decide how his country is going to be divided up.
Yes.
It's all about that. It's not about helping the people on the ground. It's not about liberating them from the evil force. It's about control. It's always about control. And this is why these are very serious topics, Tim.
Very serious.
These are very serious things.
Very serious.
And they
sit in the rooms and they make the decisions.
Right.
And again, you just wait. Years from now, you start to see the implications. And you can see the same thing happening now with the Iran conflict. Okay. Not to say that Iran didn't have its military proxy groups and the terrorists. That's a real threat. Mm-hmm. But again, we're making all of these knee-jerk reactions and have no idea what's going to happen down the line. We could be gearing up for a World War III situation. It is that scary, because the whole world is now under the pressure.
Sure.
Of these economic situations that are happening now.
Well, Trump told Zelensky, you're gambling with World War III, and now it looks like we're gambling with World War III in a full and total war. You look at this. I know we got a little bit more in the deep dive. I want to make this point. The old world order of, like, you know, Biden is senile, waddling around. The old deep state people, they all wanted to get into the Cold War beef because that's where they come from. It's like we talked about in the deep dive. It's that old animus. It's that old hunger for that battle. The new faction of the deep state, the, like, Israeli Zionist faction of it, they're the new guys, and they're like, war in the Middle East. It benefits you fighting China, you get to fight against the IMET corridor, you got to do this against Iran. So whether it's that first power block, the anti-Russian power block, or the second power block, the radical Zionist Iran war power block, you don't get a peace power block. There's not a group of people that are like, hey, let's make things better. It's like, oh, like, we want this war here. We're the Democrats. We want this war here. Yep. We're the Republicans. And this is the thing. People are like, I've seen people online apologize, and I've apologized for it, but in a different way. People being like, I didn't know I voted for Trump. I didn't know what I voted for. People are like, yeah, I should have voted for Kamala. Well, Kamala won a war
in Ukraine. No. So absolutely not.
It's all sick, and we're calling out the hypocrisy on all sides.
Well, here's the thing, Rex. The reason why I voted for Trump after being a Democrat for so long, because that was the lifestyle that I was born into. Okay, you've got 95% of blacks vote Democrat.
Sure, right.
And you're on the East Coast. Biden and Kamala and all of these things were the reason why. I'm like, we have no idea what we're doing here. We need to stop this now. Trump, save us.
Yes.
And he came and he gave his platform. He said, no more new wars.
Yes.
And I said, perfect. He has a better relationship with Putin than Biden would ever have.
Right.
And maybe he will end this war within 24 to 48 hours. But no, he's got to give him more missiles, escalate it, because he's not cooperating. And Zelensky's out here salivating. Yes, missiles, war, conflict.
Yeah, pretty good. I like it.
So when I look at all of this, I'm just like, okay. We have a situation where I think we need to start another program outside of, you know, the foreign exchange program where I said go trade a congressional person with a military person.
Yeah.
I got an even better plan.
Okay.
Every single person who's in Congress needs to go through history class.
Yes. Let's do it.
Absolutely. We're going to demand this, okay? If you are in Congress, you need to go over and you need to sit down with Tim Tompkins and do these deep dives so we can teach you on causality and all of the things that happen afterwards.
Sure. You just got to study the history of world conflict. You got to study geopolitics. You got to do your job. It's not enough to go up there and Kamala says, well, Russia is a big country and Ukraine is a little country. And Russia is being bad and is being mean to Ukraine, so we have to go and kill millions of people and spend hundreds of billions of your money. I'm Kamala Harris. And here's the thing. Kamala, you got to study the topics. You got to do a deep dive with Tim.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely mandatory.
Wow.
We demand this. Okay. So yeah, that's the end of the deep dive here. I do these because I love giving history. I love giving context. I spend a lot of time. I spend hours doing the research because I care. I care about educating people.
Sure.
And that is my ethos through and through.
Sure.
Truth is always going to prevail. I want to be on the right side of history, however the dominoes and the cards fall.
Sure. And I mean, we look at this whole Ukraine situation, and now we look at Iran, and we look at the rapid advancement in real 21st century modern warfare, modern combat. You have the FPV drones, you have the missiles and the missile defense systems, you have all sorts of trench warfare style engagements where you can't have mass groupings of troops or tanks anymore because they just get taken out by the FPVs. You've got to have like a real old style of combat backed with extreme air support and drone support. I mean, they have areas of Ukraine, I think it's like a 20-mile or 200-mile, I forget which area, I think it's 200-mile, where it's literally just FPV drones, fiber optic cable all over the ground, and no one can pass it. Because they're at an official stalemate. You know, I was wrong about this last year. I really thought the Ukrainians were going to have to make concessions at this point. I think they're still going to have to make concessions.
It's
bloody, man.
I just don't understand how they've survived so long. And Russia's now making more money off of the oil deals, and now the Iran conflict has turned into their benefit, and they're making money off of producing drones for Iran as well. They have a lot of ways to go. They're winning this war of attrition.
And I think they're in a difficult position, but I think you also got to ascribe a little bit of a profit motivation to them as well, because war is good for business.
For business.
Doesn't matter what country you're in.
You're right.
Right? So, I mean, all these people want to talk about ending the conflict, you know, Putin, Lavrov, Medvedev, y'all have had means to end the conflict. Y'all have continued the conflict on because it makes you money.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Putin is not the best man in the world. He's actually murdered people. He's taken
out all the world leaders.
Leaders have issues on their own, okay? This isn't me trying to be the Putin puppet. It's really just people need to get along. People need to do the right thing. People need to get over the ego and actually make things happen.
They got to live in reality. And that's what the American Journal is about. That's what Gray Area is about. Let's go ahead and throw up our Twitter really quick, if you can. I want you guys to know we do a Thursday and Sunday show. It's a 2 to 3 hour. We really look forward to Sundays. We always have a marquee guest. We always have a phenomenal deep dive. This is actually one of the deep dives we've done before on the Gray Area, but reloaded for mass presentation. We wanted you guys to see it because it's just one great example of the phenomenal information we give you every Sunday. You're going to want to go to Gray Area Talks on X and check us out there, and Truism Tim as well. Give me a follow.
If you guys really do like the value that I'm giving, the simple way you can support is just giving me a follow. I really do appreciate it. I respond to DMs. I see comments. I'm trying to be engaged. Yep. I like to interact with people, and I would be curious to see what you guys think about these deep dives. So we're about to have Fish back on very shortly. You guys aren't going to go anywhere. We got a lot of questions to ask him. He's making a lot of headlines these days.
I'm looking forward to it. He's a spicy guy. He's a fun guy. Maybe he's going to win. We're going to have Fish back on starting next hour.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now, new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. '20s, they found this house where it put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world, has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, We have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theallisonstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theallisonstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
I'm going to go to the store.